United Nations to highlight the global art form recognized for promoting peace, dialogue among cultures, diversity, and respect for human rights, and promoting freedom of expression. In that spirit, WPFW presents Jazz, Resistance, and Liberation, the Global Impact of a National Treasure, to commemorate International Jazz Day. On Tuesday, April 30th, extraordinary jazz hosts Candy Shannon, Craig Williams, and Willard Jenkins celebrate the music's power as a democratic and liberatory medium. At 6 p.m., we take you to Tangier, Morocco, host city for the 2024 International Jazz Day concert led by Herbie Hancock, with performances by Lakeisha Benjamin, Didi Bridgewater, master Ghanaian musician Abdella El Gord, and Shamika Copeland, among others. That's Jazz, Resistance, and Liberation, the Global Impact of a National Treasure, to commemorate International Jazz Day this Tuesday, April 30th, noon until 8 p.m. WPFW, building a jazzier world, one broadcast at a time.
Peace, y'all. This is Rod Stars.
This is G1. Together, we Rebel Diaz.
And when we out here in D.C., the DMV, we bump WPFW.
Washington.
Every Tuesday, 9 to 10 a.m., Voices with Vision. You heard?
Understand. We've been trying to move this struggle from a lower to a higher level.
This is Voices with Vision, bringing you news and analysis.
It's about cutting-edge social justice issues by mixing various voices and ideas
with information, cultural expressions, and commentary.
Voices with Vision airs every Tuesday on your Jazz and Justice station, WPFW.
April 30th, 2024, that edition of Voices with Vision. We're freestyling it today on today's show. That means that you'll get a chance to call in and be heard. I'm Nefer Freeman, one of your co-hosts in the virtual studio with your other co-host, Brother Craig. What's happening, Brother Craig?
Hey, good morning, Nefer. Good morning to all of our listeners and our podcast subscribers. Yeah, we're going to be doing what the young people say, spitting from the dome. Kind of, but we're going to be discussing how your tax dollars are being spent with the Pentagon cashing in.
Mm-hmm. And then we're going to go to Africa and the government and talk about how the government of Burkina Faso has suspended the BBC, BBC Africa, British Broadcasting Corporation, Africa, and also the Voice of America radio broadcast over their coverage of mass killings that took place in the country. And also the Black Alliance for Peace is kicking off an African Liberation Month as a prelude to African Liberation Day on May 25th. And they're kicking it off with a webinar on this coming Sunday, May 5th, a webinar that is entitled The Neocolonial Function of ECOWAS and CARICOM. ECOWAS is the Economic Community of West African States, and CARICOM is the Caribbean Community and Market or something. I can't remember. I'm blanking on what CARICOM stands for. But, you know, we're going to get right into it. Before we get into it, we'll take a little music break. And so we always say for our freedom fighters held and held and languishing behind prison walls, What's the call? Free them all. Mass destruction. Why you smiling at my? Why you laughing at my accent, Brother Craig? That ain't right. I thought it was pretty good.
Yeah, it's good. Steel Pulse and Junior Gong.
Yeah. So I'm going to read a little bit of this article that's by a colleague of my Institute for Policy Studies. Some people may know that I work at this Institute for Policy Studies. And you may have heard Lindsay Kosgarian on the show last week, Dave Rabin's show. I think it's at 11 a.m. on the Community Watch and Comment. And Dave interviewed Lindsay. I'm going to read a little bit of a article that Lindsay had published in Truth Out. It's entitled How are U.S. tax dollars being spent? Hint, the Pentagon is cashing in. The average U.S. taxpayer spent $58 to fund anti-war diplomacy efforts versus $5,109 for militarism and its support systems. And so just the beginning of this, let me a little tease out here. Every year at tax time, the National Priorities Project at the Institute for Policy Studies releases a tax receipt to show where your federal tax dollars to go. Every year, militarism in all its forms is one of the biggest expenses on the receipt, from war and weapons to deportations and detentions to prisons and policing. Budgeting choices made in Congress mean that every U.S. taxpayer will contribute to these systems of violence and oppression. By comparison, almost every constructive government program, from public health and environmental protection to education and disaster management, is woefully underfunded. For 2023, the average taxpayer will have contributed $5,109 to militarism and its support systems, including war and the military, homeland security, federal law enforcement, and veterans programs. The biggest portion of that tax bill is for the Pentagon itself at $2,974. More than half of that, $1,748, goes to the corporate contractors that benefit from U.S. militarism. That's more than the average monthly rent in the United States. So that's just the beginning two paragraphs of Lindsay's article. And so we want to talk about that. It really goes into a lot of things, even the show we just heard on Democracy Now! And the genocide taking place in Palestine. I mean, that's where a lot of that money goes. As you said, you know, oppression and all that, you know, the U.S., despite its, you know, positioning and, you know, his posturing, rather, pretending that it's trying to minimize civilian deaths, is funding a genocide and equipping and just supporting a genocide in many ways than just funding. So there's that.
And then, too, it's like with this election year coming up again, as I always say, you know, we're always being told to disregard international issues, focus on domestic things, et cetera. But this definitely shows the connection and this sort of almost, at least initially, invisible responsibility that the citizens of the United States have through their, you know, through their tax contributions to the government, funding this kind of chaos, this kind of just, you know, horrific, you know, wars, imperialist control over nations and people, all this destruction that is going on. And what's important to remember about that, too, all these things create have a ripple effect, creating more and more problems. We're all in the same world together. And as the United States destabilizes and controls Latin America and the Caribbean and Africa, creating unlivable conditions for the people there, then that leads to all kinds of immigration crises that you see. And then, you know, warfare leads to refugee crises. And it goes on and on. So it's all connected. And it's so important for the U.S. public to be knowledgeable, to be enlightened, to understand the role that the United States government is playing in the world in creating these kinds of problems and how this is coming back to the United States and the people of the United States in a way that, you know, is a negative impact, you know, for everyone.
Mm-hmm. You know, to me, it also casts questions on, you know, the fact that they, you know, this country is always presented and portrayed as a democracy. If, in fact, you know, if it was a democracy, that would mean that all of those things that you outlined, all of the, you know, the things that were said in Lindsay's, the paragraphs in Lindsay's, that we approve of it, you know. It means that people approve of it. And so I know that a lot of people want to believe that simply democracy, you know, want to believe and prefer that democracy was simply going in and casting, a ballot for a particular individual, maybe even casting for some referendums or something on your local level, because we don't have there's no right to national referendums in the United States. So all that stuff that we talked about, you can't vote on it. You can vote for the people on it. But also democracy, and this is what's sidelined when it comes to the other countries that they want to deem as not democratic, but it has to involve informed consent. It has to mean that people are, you know, aware, soundly and sufficiently aware of all of the implications of the, you know, what their government's doing, as all of how things are working out, and able to weigh in on that, you know, and have some binding decision making. And just the fact that, you know, that doesn't happen here, you know, and one is the media's involved and, and giving a different portrayal of things than what is the truth, and actually just really involved almost like the fourth branch. You know, it's like the fourth branch of the government. The Pentagon officials or the president of the White House says something, and they will treat it almost like it's fact. And they won't use words like allege or anything like that. They might say the White House said this, you know, but they do in a way that we're supposed to be able to believe what the Western governments say about something, and cast dispersions and doubt on anything that comes from their adversaries, you know, the credibility of it. You know. And so to me, that's a question of also a democracy question.
And I remember, too, and I know you remember this as well, Nefa, how it was exposed, but only really presented in the media at a very low level. But it was exposed that the intelligence agencies and the CIA have plants.
That's right.
Have plants inside of international and national media, and also relationships which serve the same purpose, and that is to create and manufacture articles and for the purpose of leveraging that into some type of public consent for a government policy, usually for war, or for assassination, for sanctions, which is a form of warfare against other countries.
Mm-hmm. You know, this kind of goes into, if we can kind of transition to this other topic right here. We're going to open the phone lines, y'all, so be ready for that. And we should have a surprise with us. We'll be joined by Brother Jamu Baraka of the Black Alliance for Peace, too, a little later. When he can join us, at least that's what he told me. So we're going to see if he comes through. But there's another story at hand that I want to read a little bit about. It's not very, shameless plug here. I'll have a full article about it coming out in Black Agenda Report tomorrow, but it's not released yet. But I'm just going to read this story part of it. Burkina Faso suspends the BBC Africa Voice of America radio broadcast over killings coverage. That's the headline. Burkina Faso has suspended the radio broadcast of BBC Africa and the U.S.-funded Voice of America, VOA, for 2 weeks over their coverage of a Human Rights Watch report accusing the army of extrajudicial killings. Human Rights Watch said the Burkina army has repeatedly committed mass atrocities against civilians in the name of fighting terrorism, and it called on authorities to investigate the massacres. The country's Communications Council said Human Rights Watch's report contained premeditatory and tendacious declarations against the army, likely to create public disorder, and it would suspend the programs of the broadcasters over their coverage of the story. And so this goes into that. It's really a lot of linkages and interrelations, but what you just said, what we were talking about, you know, how things go and how the media is used to present images and portrayals and consent for things. So a lot of people, you know, if we've been following Africa, we know that the Burkina Faso and also the countries of Mali and Niger have had some coups recently. I mean, there was a number of coups in both the particularly Burkina Faso had two before this government. Mali had a few in Niger, but these latest iterations or formations of these military governments have formed an alliance of Sahel states, what they call the Alliance of Sahel States, and that they kicked out the French, and Niger recently kicking out AFRICOM, you know, and a moves that many would call, and it's popular moves on the ground. Country, the people are celebrating these moves that some would call decolonization or de-neo-colonization, you know, and that for a long time, we joined by Brother Jamu Baraka. For a long time, Human Rights Watch, these outlets, of course, the U.S.-funded Voice of America. I mean, it was basically established as a CIA, you know, operation, but they don't, people don't think of it that much. And the British Broadcasting Corporation, which is also, you know, and they have their own, what do you call it, the office, or what do you call it, the BBC Africa, as opposed to BBC everything else, is all over the world putting their spin on things. These are the colonizers. The settler colonizers that support genocide and all that, wherever in Palestine, they want to tell us about atrocities in other places and portrayals of depicting how we should analyze and look at things. Human Rights Watch and even other outlets have, besides them, they're like a, what you call it, the human rights industrial complex. They go around and put out reports and give things. And, you know, some of the stuff, I mean, we're not just saying everything they put out is false, but it can be definitely be misleading and do, you know, not give us a proper picture of the context and complexity of situations, and in some ways false in a lot of ways, where they're making disparagings about governments and characterizing certain things as maybe the top-down official policy of governments and whatnot. So there's that. And the country, a lot of countries around the world, what we refer to as the Global South, are finding it in their best interest to either expel or put some controls on these outlets, these media outlets like Human Rights Watch and their access and whatnot, because these other countries, they can't come into the United States and do these reports and assess our conditions and whatnot. And they also don't have the reach and the strength and influence globally to make whatever they do report become, you know, the general narrative. And this goes also for agencies, you know, explicitly agencies explicitly part of the U.S. extensions of U.S. government and the Western governments, like the U.S. Agency for International Development. They've been kicked out of some countries, you know, because they just don't. And tax dollars go to this. So it's not just the military. It's really imperialism as a whole. Tax dollars go to this stuff, and that they're not really fostering, you know, they're meant to, you know, disparage the other countries and cast doubt on what their internal processes, their sovereign processes, and then also to promote the United States as some benevolent force. But John Baraka, what's happening, man? We're graced into place with Brother John Baraka.
No, my brother, I'm so happy to you brothers allowed me to join this morning. As you say, it was a last minute thing, but luckily, as I'm going through a bit of a transition, I have a little bit more time now, so I can respond to these kinds of requests. So I'm happy to be here. And from what I've heard in the last few minutes, you're discussing the latest report coming out of Burkina Faso. And the role of these various human rights organizations. And it's a complicated situation, not only Burkina Faso itself, but also, you know, the discussion around the role of these human rights organizations. And I guess for full disclosure, we need to make sure people recognize that all of these organizations I know. I used to know very well because I used to work with many of them in terms of, you know, being in, and I was actually in the human rights industrial complex.
Complex human rights, right.
Well, of course, I was a dissident force, but, some people might know that we pulled together the first human rights network that had an exclusive... Right. Critical perspective on the United States of America. In fact, the mission was to, in fact, deal with human rights abuses in the U.S.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and we built a massive network of over 300 organizations, all kinds of grassroots folks, organizations that they're doing work and work that they understood could be redefined as, in fact, human rights work. And organizations that were dealing with all of the various aspects of the repressive apparatus in this U.S. You know, for people who are working with juveniles, formerly incarcerated, death penalty work, you name it, they were part of this network. So we had the grassroots level, but we also had the level of working with these big formations, mm-hmm. like Human Rights Watch, that, interested enough, pulled out of the network. Because the Human Rights Watch is a whole different kind of entity. Mm-hmm. Amnesty International was part of it too, but Amnesty International, many people don't really know, is actually, it's not like a Human Rights Watch. Human Rights Watch is basically a staff-driven, foundation-supported entity. Okay? Mm-hmm. They have no accountability to anybody but the people who give them the money. Okay, and a big piece of the money, of course, comes from the Open Society Institute, George Soros, and others, but that's the biggest piece. Amnesty International, on the other hand, is a truly grassroots formation. It is a membership-based international organization with national chapters. And in fact, at one point, I ended up on the board of directors of Amnesty International USA back in the 1990s. So is a slightly different entity. Now, what happens is that these groups, in particular Amnesty International, for example, they put out all kind of critical stuff on the U.S., but nobody, you don't hear about it.
No, you don't hear
because
about it.
Because if you're not following this and part of this, you don't know it's coming out, and then you're not able to use it in our PE, or what some of us would say, propaganda efforts. Okay. And so, but what gets elevated is when they do something and it corresponds right at a moment when they would put a critical perspective on a organization or a state, right at the moment when the U.S. and Western powers are doing the same thing, then that gets elevated. All of a sudden now Amnesty becomes like the credible voice. But then if you raise stuff with these same powers related to a report AI puts out, then they will, you know, they'll step back and say the methodology was flawed, et cetera, et cetera. So it's a little complicated in terms of this stuff. But going back to the Burkina Faso thing, you know, and you mentioned context. One thing that these groups don't do is they don't contextualize. For them, it's like, they just deal with what they perceive to be and will research as human rights abuses. Mm-hmm. And what they do also too that's distorting is they would just take a subset of what's happening, then elevate that as though that is like what's happening generally. Or they use a subset to undermine the popular perception that may be developing that a state is in fact engage in repression, a state that's really aligned with the U.S., for example. So it cuts both ways, but usually it ends up being objectively in the service of imperialism, you know, in particular this case with Burkina Faso. We don't know the specifics of what happened, okay? And, you know, in the fog of conflict and war, all kinds of things happen. And we suspect that this notion that they were involved in a massacre where they murdered 50-something kids or whatever, it doesn't seem consistent with the popular support that they have. Okay, and so there's enough there to be highly critical of these kind of reports, in particular when they come from an organization like Human Rights Watch.
Right, and you saw, I mentioned before you got on, and I got an article coming out in BAR, Black Agenda Report, and you're one of the editors of Black Agenda. I think you read the piece.
I read
it
already.
Night. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, but yeah, what you said is right on. I want to do something real quick before we get too much into it. We're going to open the phone lines. I don't know if I didn't warn you about that, but we're going to open the phone lines. But I want to, we started off talking about the article with and the people by my colleague at the Institute for Policy Studies and the National Priorities Project about Tax Day. And and how the taxes are spent. I'm going to call it a shameless plug, or an information plug. And we want to thank Dave Rabin on People's Watch and Comment, or People's Community Watch and Comment. But on Thursday, May 2nd, from 1 to 2 p.m., you'll be able to get a little more directly with Lindsay Kosgarian and also Aaliyah Lusuegro, on where your 2023 taxes went, a people's briefing. It's a webinar online. And so go to, and that's May 2nd from 1 to 2 p.m. So the URL to check it out, to go for get more information about the briefing and register for it is ips-dc.org/events/briefing tax spending. I'm going to say it one more time. We're going to encourage people. It's going to be a very informative webinar, and you'll be able to get to ask your questions, and it's going to have visuals and everything. ips-dc.org/events/briefing tax spending. So check that out. If you just go to ips-dc.org/events, you should also get it right there too. So you don't have to do everything I said. But with this, and then the phone lines, we didn't get a chance to. We will talk about the webinar that Black Lives for Peace is doing May 5th. It's the Neo-Colonial Function of ECOWAS and CARICOM. And maybe we can talk about that a little bit. We want to open the phone lines, too, and let people weigh in. 202-588-0893 is the number to call. We're only talking about, things are interrelated, interconnected, so we're not going to be strict about it. But please, let's kind of keep it to what we're talking about here. The webinar, The Neo-Colonial Function of ECOWAS and CARICOM, on Sunday is from 11 a.m. to 12:30 p.m. Eastern Time. And the link for that to register and get more information is bit.ly. It's a bit.ly link, bit.ly/BAP webinar. That's bit.ly/BAP for Black Lives for Peace webinar. And you'll go there and read about the thing, and you'll be able to just register right for it. So I just wanted to put that out there. I'll say it again a little later in the show. But Brother Jammu, we already got a caller. There's a lot of you were talking about some of these complicated things with the human rights what we call the human rights complex. Now I want to admit that. I concur with you about Amnesty International. One of the things that we did, PACA was able to do with Amnesty and local Amnesty International, was doing connections between the police repression that we face in the U.S. And they connect. We had actually facilitated a physical connection with mothers who had the same repression in Brazil. And brought the mothers down here, and we had a roundtable discussion. They came to PACA demonstrations for Alonzo Smith, and a lot of the mothers here, facing it. So there was some nice, good work. There is good work that happens there. And I remember Noor, who was one of a friend of mine that was working there, a young person. I don't know if she's working there. That was a long time ago. So that kind of stuff happens. And then, like you said, also we were. Because of the work of the U.S. Human Rights Network that you were one of the founders of, or if not the founder, we were PACA did one of our kind of founding things was brought a delegation or was able to be the anchor group for the fact-finding mission of the UN Working Group of Experts on People of African Descent. When they came to Washington, D.C., and we had a big town hall with the people with them and other things with that formation. So we were host because the U.S. Out of Africa Network allowed us to be the anchor group in Washington, D.C., or, accepted us as that back then in 2016. So, this stuff is complicated. We're not trying to make this blanket thing. We got to work it the way we can, for our interests.
Mm-hmm. Let's give out that phone number to 202-588-0893 is the phone number to use it to ask a question or make a comment. 202-588-0893.
Mm-hmm. And we don't want to keep the caller that's already on waiting. So, caller, welcome. Thank you for calling Voices with Vision. You have a question or a comment?
This is Rick calling from Germany.
Hey, Rick.
Hello to the two brothers as host. And is the other brother, the brother who said he was a member of the board of Amnesty International, is he still with you?
Yes.
Okay. I have a simple question. I don't know if it's related to what you're talking about or not, but I will ask it. Do you see any chance for peace there in Israel? I don't know about the two-state solution, but do you see any chance for peace there in Israel, or as some would call it, Palestine?
Mm-hmm. Well, it's definitely connected, but I think he's directing it at you, Brother Jinjamu.
Thanks so much for that question. Yeah, my name is Ajamu Baraka. I'm no longer with the with Amnesty International. That short experience was more than 30 years ago. In terms of your question, very important question. That's the question. That's the question of the moment. Many people believe, and I believe, that there could be no peace without social justice. That's the perspective that we take in the Black Alliance of Peace. And that's why we said we have to struggle against those forces that are responsible for the suffering, responsible for the war mongering. They have to be defeated if we're going to have authentic, sustainable peace. So in Israel, Palestine, unless there is justice for the occupied Palestinians, the colonized Palestinians, then there will be resistance. And as long as the settler colonial Israeli fascist apartheid state is committed to attempting to smash, destroy Palestinian resistance, Palestinian national aspiration, then the stage is set for continued violence, continued oppression. And especially there is a strong possibility it will continue as long as you have the fascist in the U.S., the fascist settler colonial state, and continuing to provide the resources to the tune, this last one, $26 billion of your money being sent to help to perpetuate genocide. So no, there will always be resistance. Just like in the U.S., there's always going to be resistance among and coming from our people, those of us who are able to maintain our sanity and our consciousness, will always be in opposition to this racist, white supremacist, backward, fascistic, settler, colonial state. They are mm-hmm. the enemy. We are not confused about that at all. And so, you know, we build movement and we'll be in resistance. So, no, as long as you have oppressive relationships, as long as you have the dominant and subordinate, there's always going to be that spark of resistance, that desire to be free, that desire to imagine things in a different kind of way, different kinds of relationships. So there always will be what we refer to, I guess, as violence. But as Frantz Fanon said, sometimes violence is the cleansing force, especially for the oppressed.
Mm-hmm. Now, I don't know if we have any more. I don't know if the call is still there or if we have any. But I wanted to ask you something, and also I want to do another full disclosure of my own, because you just said you had been with Amnesty International. You're with the Black Alliance for Peace right now. You're the chair of the coordinating committee of the Black Alliance for Peace. And my full disclosure that I'm with the Black Alliance for Peace, I'm not, just to make it, you know, known that I'm not trying to hide that or talk like it's some, like we're just interviewing somebody from it. So, and that also with Pan-African Community Action, which is a member organization of the Black Alliance for Peace. I want to ask you about that vision. We have a caller, one more caller. But that sort of, when I say vision, I'm seeing, you know, we want to talk about a different world where we can realize peace. If you can talk about BAP, we refer to BAP, Black Armistice for Peace, as BAP, the concept of peace. And then also the fact that we have member organizations of the Black Lives for Peace, and we have individuals, and we're trying to build something here. And like, how old is that? And also the concept of people-centered human rights, you know, the relationship, interrelationship between those things. I know I always do this to you, brother, when you come on. I ask these kind of abstract, very interconnected questions. Before we get to the next call, if you can just give us a quick your quick responses to that.
They're complicated and connected, and that's how we have to approach these questions. That's how we have to think about these questions. The Black Alliance for Peace takes a position that we understand that there is a radical approach to the question of peace. We're not pacifists. We don't believe that we're going to achieve a peaceful world by just changing consciousness. We understand that the reason we have conflict, systematic state violence, is that you have powerful forces that are attempting to maintain their power, attempting to maintain relationships where they can continue to plunder and degrade and dehumanize other human beings, and that there always, as we said a moment ago, will be resistance to that. And that those conflicts take place in terms of targeting individuals, organizations, movements, but also targeting states. So we take the position, the Black Radical position, the Black Radical Peace tradition, that says that peace isn't the absence of conflict, but it is the recognition of those forces that perpetuate suffering and perpetuate violence. And we name those forces and we say they have to be defeated. And those forces are white supremacy, the colonial capitalist system, and patriarchy. Okay? So we say until there is, and then we go from there and talk about the specifics. We refer to, for example, the U.S., EU, NATO axis of domination, okay? So we say until those forces are, in fact, defeated, contained, controlled, or whatever, there'll be no peace, because we see them as the driving forces of violence and degradation in the world today. In fact, we clearly say that the Western U.S. and Western powers represent a existential threat to global humanity, because they have appeared to take a position that they are going to either maintain hegemony or blow up the world.
And there's a lot of several organizations. The last part I'll try to answer, and we get let the caller talk. That we have to be organized, and that they're already, and we have to come together. Those who are already organized in the organizations, we have to actually come together. So that's Black Alliance for Peace has, you know, as an alliance of organizations, but also giving an outlet or a connection to those who may not be in an organization, to, you know, as individuals. So we have that caller. Welcome to Voice with Vision. If you have a question or comment, and before you say anything, let's repeat the number for people to be able to be involved in the conversation, 202-588-0893. You can call, ask a question, make a comment, weigh in on the conversation. We're talking about several things here, but bottom line, we're talking about peace and justice. Well, caller, welcome to Voice with Vision.
Good morning, sir. How you doing?
Good. Good morning. We're doing good.
Okay. I'd like to know, sir, why are y'all not talking about the movement in West Africa when you're talking about the French was thrown out of Senegal and Ivory Coast? They said they want the French out of there, which they should have did a long time ago. I don't know why these African countries, even black people in this country, why are they always looking for white people to save them, be involved in their liberation, and trying to stop their oppression by the one that's oppressing them? I don't understand it. And to me, I think every black person in this world should get behind that brother in Africa. He's trying to get the youth resources of Africa for the benefit of African people. That's dangerous talk in the Western world. We black people need to support that type of movement in the African continent, in Jamaica, wherever we find black people. I'm a black nationalist. I don't believe you're going to get peace with people don't put war on you. You can't talk peace in your organization. I don't know, like Black Lives for Peace. Peace with who? Your enemies? The enemy's there to destroy you. You want peace with them, or you want peace with your own people? I don't understand it. But I do think that brother in West Africa, I do think this is a—
Which brother are you referring to in West Africa?
Huh? This is a brother in Ivory Coast. There's three countries there. They got French troops there. They told them they want them out of there. I don't know why the PFW hasn't given no—
Before we go to that detail, let me, if I could start responding, I think we can get some clarification.
Hold on, Colin, if you can. Go ahead.
Yeah, no, we appreciate the question. Then maybe the caller may have started the program a little late, because I think at the very top of the program, the discussion was on Burkina Faso. And last I checked, that is part of West and Central Africa and part of a very important development in the so-called Sahel with Mali, with Niger, developing a new Pan-African alliance, not only to expel the French, but now also to expel the U.S. And the political developments in Senegal is part of that process of the reawakening, if you will, of Africans in West Africa, in particular Africans who are part of the French Empire. So mm-hmm. there's synergy developing here among all of these forces. The caller may not realize also, too, that yourself, Comrade Nefa Freeman, is a member of the Black Alliance of Peace and the Black Alliance of Peace Africa team. And the cornerstone of that work is the U.S. Out of Africa network and the campaign to expel the U.S. African Command from the African continent.
Right.
So there are Africans in the U.S. who are absolutely clear about the mission and their responsibility at this moment in history, and absolutely clear about the connections between all of us as African people who are still dealing
with the
issue of oppression.
Hello?
Yeah, go ahead.
Yes, I wanted to speak on this, sir. Now, we had a president in this country called Barack Obama, and that organization, that mechanism that he put into Africa, he headed it. He did it. Obama did it. Supposed to be a black man. And we have the other problems in Nigeria and Ghana. They got these puppet governments. They're all corrupt. That's why we can't do anything, because they're so damn corrupt. To me, sir, when you got the one brother that's standing up, as these Malcolm X and Martin Luther King, everybody has stood up, we have to support those people, what they're trying to do for us as a people across the board, across the globe. Until we do that, we can't talk about peace with nobody over there in Israel. You said the man earlier, he asked about the peace in Israel. How do the Israelis don't want no peace? They want to destroy the people. They want the land. So how can you
talk with these people when they want to destroy you? Because basically, there's no question. There's no opposition to what you were saying. And in fact, it's more than just one individual in West Africa that needs to be supported. The whole process needs to be supported. And we're not confused about the notion of peace. If you're listening closely, you would have heard that basically what we say about peace, you can't have peace until you destroy the oppressors. And we name the oppressive relationships. So we join you in your outrage to what's happening with our people from these Europeans. There's no debate about that.
So what are we going to do about it? You got these puppet governments.
Get organized, Africa. You're not even doing any serious study, because you come on this program as though there's opposition to your position. Go to the BlackAllianceOfPeace.com and join a organization that, in fact, is fighting to, in fact, make these connections and to build our power. As simple as that. Let's move on.
Yeah. So the number to call is 202-588-0893. We only got a little bit of time left. I want to— Brother Craig, I know you've been patiently, I know you might have another, but I want to mention, go ahead.
I want to give callers a chance to call in. That's
right. So we have another caller. So let's take that one. I want to plug the webinars before we go. Welcome, caller. I'm sorry. Welcome to Voice of Vision. Thank you for calling. Caller, you there? Next caller. Are you there? Maybe Hello? They don't know that they're on now. Okay, well, we can't have— maybe you're on a mute or something, but okay, thank you. Thank you. So let me, while we're doing, waiting for more callers to call 202-588-0893, I'm going to read again really quickly just so people have it. We have a webinar on Thursday coming up that people should join. It's about the tax spending, where your 2023 taxes went, a people's briefing. It's on Thursday, May 2nd from 1 p.m. to 2 p.m. And the number to call for more, I mean, not the number to call, the link to go to for more information about it and description and to register is ips-dc.org/events, events plural with the S on the end, ips-dc.org/events with the S on the end. And it will be, the webinar will be led by Lindsay Koshgarian of the National Priorities Project, and also National Priorities Project, Aaliyah Lucero, I'm sorry. And then also we have the webinar of the Black Alliance for Peace is coming up. The neocolonial function of ECOWAS and CARICOM. And that is to be more information at bit.ly/BAP, as in Black Alliance for Peace, BAP webinar. Bit.ly, that's bit.ly/BAP webinar. Thank you. Is there another? Do we have another caller? Brother Jamu, thank you for being on here. You chopping it up. I wonder if we can go in. We have to let you go. We got a few more minutes. Let me read a little bit about this CARICOM ECOWAS thing, and maybe you can talk about that a little bit while you're on here. And the description of it is, developments in Africa have reached a crucial point. The U.S. and EU states work with intergovernmental regional organizations like the Economic Community of West African States, ECOWAS, as a geostrategy to give cover for neocolonialist interests. The people have protested against ECOWAS sanctions in response to the military transitional governments in the new alliance of Sahel states that we just talked about, viewed by many as a step towards African self-determination. I'm going to skip up. In the Americas, the intergovernmental organization CARICOM's involvement in the affairs of Haiti has been controversial, notably during the 2004 coup against the democratically elected president Jean-Bertrand Aristide. Today, CARICOM members are supporting the U.S.-backed Kenya-led invasion of Haiti, raising concerns and prompting scrutiny of the organization's adherence to its stated principles, particularly on non-interference. So we have that webinar coming up. That's going to be a lively one. Any thoughts on what you think people should know about that?
First, I think that we should strongly encourage people to be a part of that webinar. Mm-hmm. We've got to be clear about what it is we're trying to do and the enemy that we are up against. We can't be pushing us surface and superficial information, okay? So you got to get grounded in these complicated issues, and sometimes very simple issues when it comes to the issue of oppression. So yes, these are two structures that are interconnected. That's why we have to build interconnected people's movement to confront them. The ECOWAS has been now has disintegrated into, in essence, a tool of Western imperialism. Mm-hmm. They were being encouraged to, in fact, be the cover for a military confrontation with
Niger.
They were developing or trying to advance their national interests and real national sovereignty. In the Americas, CARICOM has degenerated to providing cover for a new kind of liberal Pan-Africanism, a neoliberal Pan-Africanism, using Africans from Kenya to, in fact, invade Haiti. Now that the stage was set to suggest that these natives, these black folks in Haiti, can't govern themselves. So we have to be aware of how imperialism is moving so we can counter it and help our people not get confused and trapped into providing support for forces that are contrary to their objective interests. So please participate in that webinar and even go further than that. Support PACA, support the Black Alliance of Peace, support any organization that is actively out there trying to build alternative power, trying to defeat this enemy that we are all collectively against, not just Africans in the U.S., but that's why we're talking about Palestine. We talk about all the other struggles because it's interconnected.
Right. Looks like we've run on the end. And I want real quick, one of the things that you had in there, what we said is that we're not just talking, there's political education and awareness that's involved, but we're actually forging the connections on the ground in Africa, on the ground in Haiti. You know, so it's also that kind of thing. This part of the organizing that we're doing. And that's important. So sometimes people say, all y'all do is talk. Nah, we not. We building something, you know. Some stuff. So anyway, brother, thank you for coming on the last minute, man.
My pleasure.
Really appreciate that.
Good seeing you and Craig.
And thank you for all the callers that weighed in. All of you, your contributions were invaluable to the conversation. And so, hey, you know, all I can say is, if you're not fighting for the liberation of your people, fall back.
Fall back.
No compromise, no retreat.
No compromise, no retreat.
F-A-L-L-B-A-C-K. Fall back if you ain't trying to ride for your people. Fall back if you ain't trying to die for your people. F-A-L-L-B-A-C-K. Fall back if you ain't trying to ride for your freedom. Fall back if you ain't trying to die for your freedom. L-I-B-R-B-G, we live. F-R-E, yeah, D-I-E. We lace music with code, just something to bring us closer. Kick true, the young black youth like we supposed to. No swine in our rovers or Louis Vuitton holsters. We in the trench with young 50 cents and street soldiers. The ones they ain't lock up and send the foreign waters to fight for something they ain't got in their own borders. It's us, the free unit, they ain't holding us back. We score the soundtrack to this movement, y'all just rap. Brat, black on black and clap about that. State trooper shot with Severly's boy in the back. Miss Rogers boy in the back. While we ain't firing back, the boys is gone and they ain't coming back. We gotta go back. San Cole for writing exact. It's the red, green, and the black, black, black. It go F-A-L-L-B-A-C-K. Fall back if you ain't trying to rob for your people. Fall back if you ain't trying to die for your people. Come on. F-A-L-L-B-A-C-K. Fall back if you ain't trying to rob for your freedom. Fall back.
International Jazz Day was established in 2011 by the United Nations to highlight the global art form recognized for promoting peace, dialogue among cultures, diversity, and respect for human rights, and promoting freedom of expression. In that spirit, WPFW presents Jazz Resistance and Liberation, the Global Impact of a National Treasure, to commemorate International Jazz Day. On Tuesday, April 30th, extraordinary jazz hosts Candy Shannon, Craig Williams, and Willard Jenkins celebrate the music's power as a democratic and liberatory medium. At 6 p.m., we take you to Tangier, Morocco, host city for the 2024 International Jazz Day concert, led by Herbie Hancock, with performances by Lakeisha Benjamin, Didi Bridgewater, master Ghanaian musician Abdellah El Gord, and Shamika Copeland, among others. That's Jazz, Resistance, and Liberation, the Global Impact of a National Treasure, to commemorate International Jazz Day this Tuesday, April 30th, noon until 8 p.m. WPFW, building a jazzier world, one broadcast at a time.
It takes volunteers to keep jazz and justice alive in the DMV. And WPFW is in need of listeners' participation in our spring membership drive by answering phones and entering data from May 12th through the 25th. It's a fun opportunity to meet WPFW's staff and WPFW's host of your favorite shows. Are you a student in need of community service or a member of an organization that loves volunteering? If so, we're calling on you. You can contact our volunteer coordinator, Vinny Jack, at volunteers@wpfw.org or call at 202-588-0999, extension 360. Show your love for WPFW by volunteering today. Thank you.
The best in live music entertainment is coming this spring to Bethesda Theater. Also coming is Trouble Funk, featuring go-go legend Big Tony, celebrating his birthday by performing all their go-go classics on Friday, May 3rd at 9 p.m. And on Mother's Day, it's Howard Hewitt performing his own popular songs and those by Shalamar. But two shows on Sunday, May 12th at 3 p.m. and 7 p.m. The Whisperers on April 26th and 27th. Trouble Funk featuring Big Tony on May 3rd. And Howard Hewitt on Mother's Day, May 12th. Get more information on all shows at BethesdaTheater.com. WPFW is a proud media partner with Bethesda Theater.